Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi. And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of March 24th, 2017. And today, we are thrilled to be joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Good. How you doing?
Good, D.R. As always, good to have you with us. So, D.R., there is the usual Roman candle of craziness going on this week. Today is, let's see, we're recording this on Thursday. Tomorrow will be Friday the 24th. The big debacle right now is the inability of the GOP to ram through their health care proposal. They seem to have founded upon reality and conflicting opinion. But it seems to me that may be a, how shall we say, a example, a template for other collisions with reality that the Trump administration is bumping into, like what the heck are they going to do about crushing all climate work, right? So tell me, what's the status of Mr. Trump's nefarious plans?
Well, there's a recent report in the New York Times that apparently the Trump administration is still finalizing plans as yet, you know, obscure, to basically issue a series of executive orders that will effectively shut down all of President Obama's efforts to reduce carbon pollution. Obviously, if he attempts to issue these executive orders, there will be a massive, massive legal fight, one that will presumably result in him sustaining even more political damage than he has already sustained by what he's been doing so far.
But, D.R., let me just say, the orange-headed one has already is trying to gut the EPA's funding. He's been to Detroit and he wants to try and turn around the emissions rules for automobiles. He's tried to rescind the clean water rules of the country. I mean, this is particularly having to do with the Paris Accord, the famous Paris Accord that was signed in December of 2015, right? Is that what the delay is about, or are there other things, other terrible things we haven't thought of yet that he's hoping to do?
Well, it was previously reported that the Trump administration seems to be undecided as to whether or not they should fully pull out of the Paris climate deal, pull out of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which governs the Paris climate deal. They seem to be completely unsure as to what exactly to do. And, you know, there's been speculation that there are two factions within the Trump administration, one, the hardcore ideological faction led by Steve Bannon that seeks to, as he himself put it, deconstruct the administrative state. And the other faction is said to be comprised of White House advisor, I believe his name is Gary Cohn, which is said to be the sort of faction that sort of recognizes that if they try to deconstruct the administrative state and all vestiges thereof, there will be catastrophic political consequences. So it's like there's the devil Bannon and the quasi-angel cone on Trump's shoulder, and they're both sort of, and he's basically trying to decide, you know, which one he should listen to.
Okay, all right, but it has to do with the international, the implications of an international decision to pull out of is a funny word, but to stop prosecuting, shall we say, or stop working on the Paris Agreement. And now it seems, if memory serves, the President Obama, our last true president, President Obama's clean power plan is still on the books, right? That has not, he has not been directed, the president has not directed Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA, to begin to dismantle that yet, has he? Right, that still stands for the time being?
That still stands for the time being, obviously still tied up in the courts, but it has not yet been dismantled.
Right, and all right. Well, I think that the, yes, but I guess the point being that even as in the healthcare debate, I mean, there are some harsh realities that have to be faced if you want to try and implement an ideological vision, which sounds great when you're in front of a crowd of cheering people, but when you actually mm-hmm. look at it in the real, the harsh light of day, it looks a lot less attractive, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And it's interesting that that the Cohen figure also figured in another interesting report in Politico.com, in which Steve Bannon is said to be furious over the fact that Mr. Cohen had a meeting with James Baker and other Republicans who are trying to urge the Trump administration and the Republican Party to embrace a fee and dividend program or sort of revenue neutral carbon pricing program. Obviously,
this is the thing we talked about a couple of weeks ago, right? The Republican yes. proposal to put a price on carbon through a kind of a tax, right?
Yes, the Climate Leadership Council. Uh-huh. And if you read between the lines of the Politico story, it goes back to, again, the point that I made earlier, which is that Cohen seems to recognize that if Trump lets his worst ideological impulses run wild and lets Scott Pruitt's worst ideological impulses run wild, it will be a disaster for the Trump administration and for the Republican Party, which may be why he decided to have the meeting with the Climate Leadership Council. But Bannon is like ideology uber alles, and therefore he can't tolerate any sort of anything that looks like, you know, rational policymaking. He just wants all the administrative state destroyed, essentially.
I sometimes wonder, DR, if you don't give too much credit to the people around, well, to Trump himself and the people around him, because I haven't read it yet. I'm not even sure it's been published, but this interview that he had in Time magazine is reported mm-hmm. to be pretty much sort of an off-the-wall self-indictment of the guy's own lack of contact with reality. I mean, he's mm-hmm. still doubling down on Ted Cruz's father killed Jack Kennedy, which, mm-hmm. I don't know.
It almost makes you miss the days when it was only the first lady that consulted astrology.
Yes, back in the day. Well, so I guess the other climate news coming out of D.C. and dear listener, there are local stories, upbeat stories about climate, but the federal stuff tends to suck the oxygen out of the room. One of the important stories that's going on right now in the last few days has been the, shall we say, the interview of Neil Gorsuch with the Senate committee about letting him have a life appointment to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So by all accounts, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Gorsuch carried himself very well, and he had practiced a lot of very noble-sounding and inspiring lines about, you know, treating everyone fairly. All the people that come before him would be treated as human beings, and yada yada yada. Mm-hmm. Do you believe a word of any of that? Yeah.
He's probably the most coached Supreme Court nominee in recent history. I think there's an NPR story contrasting him with Robert Bork 30 years ago, that Robert Bork refused to go through rehearsals, what they call murder boards, uh-huh. in order to prepare Supreme Court nominees for want of a better phrase, extreme vetting. But Gorsuch apparently went through a lot of these murder boards, and you can clearly tell from his answers that he basically sort of, you know, provided oatmeal and warm mush as part of his responses.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I find it almost offensive that the guy will say, I mean, because it sounds stirring, right? If you mm-hmm. want to believe, he said things about how, you know, anybody that comes before him, whether a president or a, you know, prince or a pauper, he will treat them fairly. Mm-hmm. But I just take that as a bunch that it's not so much a lie, but he will listen to them carefully. But his judicial philosophy, which is basically that of a corporate tool, you know, mm-hmm. will grind up anyone and see himself as being fair, because his mm-hmm. judicial philosophy has great favorability towards power and influence, right? Those who hold power and influence get more. And so he can say that he will listen carefully to everyone, but the reality, when it goes into the blender of his brain, it's going to come out as a thing that is anathema to the good benefit the commonweal of the people. Mm-hmm. I'm sputtering almost. I get so mad. Forgive me.
He definitely seemed to get a little flustered when he was subjected to intense questioning by Senators Franken and Senators Whitehouse. The exchange between Gorsuch and Whitehouse was very, very interesting, because Whitehouse pressed him on the issue of dark money and unaccountable money in politics. And Gorsuch kept on trying to argue that, you know, the best way to remedy that would be for Congress to pass strong laws, you know, regulating dark money in politics. But White House pressed him, and Gorsuch really had no comeback about the fact that when the Citizens United ruling came down, Citizens United got rid of the McCain, essentially got rid of the McCain-Feingold law. And as Sheldon Whitehouse has previously pointed out, and as Brad Friedman on his broadcast recently pointed out, once Citizens United came down, that killed dead bipartisanship on climate change. You know, literally a month before Citizens United came down, there was Maria Cantwell, the Democrat from Washington State, and Susan Collins, the Republican from Maine, had co-sponsored bipartisan climate legislation. But once Citizens United came down, that was it. And when Sheldon Whitehouse pressed Gorsuch on this issue of the corruption of money in politics, Gorsuch had no real answer. His answer was, as they say in the legal community, void for vagueness, basically.
Yes, void for I'm going to have to write that. Maybe that's the name of the show. Void for vagueness. I just to remind everyone, so the reason that climate hawks should be deeply suspicious of Mr. Gorsuch is basically two reasons from what I have read in various kinds of analysis. The first is something we've touched on before, and it's called the Chevron deference, right? Which is basically the courts. So it comes from a case involving Chevron Oil, right? Mm-hmm. In which the Supreme Court gave deference to the EPA or the regulators to say the regulators know the most about the particular issue at hand, and the court should give deference to the EPA, and that was all wound up in a case that had to do with Chevron. So it's called the Chevron deference, right? That's mm-hmm. the phrase you see. Now, it turns out that Antonin Scalia, the late unlamented Antonin Scalia, who met his maker on a hunting trip, which somehow seems right. But anyway, mm-hmm. Antonin Scalia was very much against things like the Chevron deference. I mean, Scalia saying things like, oh, the EPA can find an elephant in a mouse hole by taking mm-hmm. some little tiny bit of regulation and saying, oh, I have a newfound power, right? And of course, this goes right to the heart of what Obama's climate plan was, right? The mm-hmm. EPA tried to use the regulations to basically attack the climate problem by, in a sense, expanding the definition of some of the regulations, right? Mm-hmm. So when they say that Gorsuch is more of a opponent than Scalia for the idea of giving deference to the EPA, that's a bad thing, because you know that yes. Scalia was no friend. So that's one reason that climate hawks should not like Mr. Gorsuch. The second reason I've read about says that it has to do with this vague thing that you wouldn't think matters much, but it turns out that if you, you, in quotation marks, as a citizen or as a nonprofit organization or whatever, if you want to bring suit to a court and make an accusation against someone, that is to say, suppose you're the Environmental Defense Fund and you want to bring a suit against Exxon, you as the Environmental Defense Fund have to have something called standing, in quotation mm-hmm. marks, the famous, let's say we say the Mr. Trump quotation marks, standing. That is to say, you have to show that you have been harmed, that you have suffered some kind of damage that the court can then try to adjudicate. You cannot come in and say, I have some kind of prospective damage because I think that in the future what these guys are going to do is going to harm me. That's not standing, right? Mm-hmm. And so litigants, people who bring court cases, work very hard to prove that they have a standing in order to bring a suit. And it turns out Mr. Gorsuch is very skeptical of the idea of standing in environmental cases because typically, if you're trying to be proactive, the damage has not really happened yet. Mm-hmm. So, Dion, let me throw it back to you. Have you seen anything even related to that? Or in your background, can you make any comment about, the standing in these cases?
There was a great piece in Mother Jones by Rebecca Lieber about Gorsuch's contempt for the concept of standing when it regards to environmental cases. And this is very, very important regarding a case that we've discussed, which is the case up in, I believe, Washington State, in which a number of teenagers have filed a lawsuit against now the Trump administration, claiming that the Trump administration has failed to protect them from the impacts that they will likely sustain as a result of climate change. Now, with if Gorsuch is on the Supreme Court and this case goes to the Supreme Court, he would in all likelihood declare that those teenagers don't have the standing even to bring a lawsuit, because he's going to claim, as you know, right-wing judges often claim, that the potential environmental damages from climate change are speculative and therefore not provable, and therefore they don't have any standing to bring a lawsuit. So Gorsuch on the Supreme Court could basically make it clear that the plaintiffs in that case will never see anything resembling justice.
Right. And I mean, so these are the kinds of, I mean, they're tiny, they're subtle issues, right? They're way hidden back in the weeds when Mr. Gorsuch makes this very, very American-sounding statement of treating everyone who comes before him as an equal. That's a bunch of BS, right? This guy has got these philosophical principles in the background that are not good for environmentalists. And so let me just kind of close the point. So at the end of this week, I guess Chuck Schumer has called for a filibuster against Mr. Gorsuch. And of course, then there's a whole thing about the nuclear option, and you can have various opinions about that. But the idea that the Senate Democrats would try to filibuster Mr. Gorsuch at some level in the name of calling back Merrick Garland, Mr. Obama's nominee. I mean, those guys, if you're in Massachusetts, call up Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey and tell them that you want them to filibuster. If you're in a different state, do the same thing. These senators need to know that when they go out on a limb and do something as dramatic as filibustering a Supreme Court nominee, that they've got that they're being endorsed, right, DR?
Exactly. There's also the argument too that the Democrats should filibuster a nominee for a president who is sort of under suspicion, for want of a better phrase.
Yes.
And there's also the general principle that that the seat that Gorsuch seeks was stolen from President Obama, and that therefore, you know, Democrats should not go along with, you know, aiding and abetting a political crime, if not an explicit, you know, felony.
Right,
it's
right,
a political
right.
felony.
I mean, I don't see it as hearings. You know, weepy liberal snowflakes complaining about the past. I mean, the whole thing with Merrick Garland was an affront to the democratic process, and these guys, you know, even. Let's assume, I was going to make the joke that says, you know, the Mitch McConnell didn't want a president in his last year in office to nominate a Supreme Court justice. Assuming that Mr. Trump doesn't last a year, he's also in the last year of his office and shouldn't have the right to appoint a Supreme Court nominee for the next, let's face it, if Gorsuch gets in, he's going to be there for 30 years, right? He's in for a long time. Okay, DR, let me put down the heavy burden of complaining about the federal government. A couple things that I want everyone to know. One is that on April 29th, which is not that far away anymore, will be a big march down in D.C. Turns out here in Massachusetts, there's already efforts underway to secure buses, so you can sign up for a bus. There's a link, it's 350MA, 350MA.org, I think it is. Is sponsoring buses. So if you're in the Massachusetts area, you can get buses. If you go to, I'll put up the link for the 350 site. If you're not in the New England area to get a bus to DC, but April 29th is coming. I'm going to be there. Look for me. Please think about that. Another thing that's coming up is this week, starting, Friday is the 24th. So Sunday and for the rest of the week, in Brookline, Massachusetts, will be what's called the Climate Week. And so there's lots of events. I'll put up a link to all the stuff. Every day something's happening. But on Wednesday, the 28th, there's the 29th of March, I guess. I believe it's Wednesday. The executive director of MCAN, Carol Oldham, will be talking about activism at a church in Brookline. I'll put up the links to it. It's right on Calm Avenue. The church is, if you want to go. But that's a good thing. So those two things are out there. And of course, there's a scientist march on April 22nd, both in D.C. and in satellite places around the country. So there's stuff happening. Get yourself ready. The weather here in New England is cold the last few days, but springtime's coming. So, DR, we're going to put it down there. People can find the links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. Please share us with your friends. It turns out there's something called, there's a hashtag, a Twitter hashtag called #TryPod with a TRYPOD, because evidently there's an effort to get people to introduce their favorite podcast other than the one they're on and to get people to listen to podcasts. So I didn't, I mean, I have a bunch of podcasts, but I'm not ready to throw one out there now. Maybe the next show we'll put up a different podcast that's fun to listen to. But anyway, you can find us on Facebook. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, yada, yada, yada. You can, of course, you can find us on iTunes. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks so much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.